We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Here comes Perreault across the line, on in front for Little, a backhand shot, he scores! Brian Little, deked up Corpusello, they've regained their two-goal lead, and it's 5-3, Winnipeg!
It's go time. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Manuk. Drew Mandel is off this week. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. The last regular season game of the year. Can you believe that, Dave?
No, I can't believe it. It's one of those things, the season goes long and then kind of jumps out at you at the end and you're like, wait, where's the season going? Where is it gone? Where has the time flown by?
Unbelievable. You have the last Jets regular season game of the year, and you have the last Moose regular season home game of the year. Puck drop is 6 o'clock tonight between the Jets and Predators. Hustler and Lawless are going to kick it off at 3 o'clock live from Boston Pizza Place. And then you've got Ricky Ralph coming up at 5 o'clock. I don't know, by the way, if Rick likes me calling him Ricky Ralph, but...
I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's kind of a cute term of endearment. You guys have a little thing. You've been doing some pre and post with Slick Rick.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk to him about it maybe tonight. So, Dave, we're going to get into the Jets-Predators game in a little bit. And I should mention, we have a lot of guests coming up on today's show. Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun is going to join us at 9:30. And then we're going to be joined by Adam Vingan, covers the Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. He's going to be up at 10. And then we're going to be joined by Eric Comrie. At 10:30, Eric Comrie picked up his first career NHL win on Thursday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. At 11 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Bob Duff. We're going to talk to Bob about the last two ever home games at Joe Louis Arena. And then at 11:30, we're going to be joined by Chris Peters. He covers college hockey, and we're going to talk to Chris about the final that's coming up tonight at 7 o'clock between Denver and Minnesota Duluth. Dave, let's get right into Thursday night's game between the Jets and the Blue Jackets. We mentioned Eric Comrie. He picks up his first career NHL victory in his 100th career professional game. What were your thoughts on that game? There were a lot of goals, but I guess the real story was the play of Eric Comrie.
Yeah, I thought Eric had a good game. I mean, he started the way you kind of anticipated. He probably enjoyed it. Was a lot of action right away to really, because, you know, the one thing as a young goalie who's getting into your first professional NHL game, that is that you don't want to be sitting there for a long time with a lull in the action and not having any pucks on you, because he's the kind of guy who likes that sort of early engagement. So I think, you know, sure, it was a flurry. I think it was 6 or 8 shots in the first 6 minutes, and it seemed like they came like rapid fire at one point. But you know what? He stood tall and for a 6'1" goalie, and he handled himself. And so he, you know, that really gives the team confidence when they see that the young kid who's coming up and getting this opportunity isn't going to kind of fall on his face the first sign of pressure from the opposition. And it was a good first period for sure for Eric Comrie.
Dave, I want to throw to Eric Comrie's post-game audio from Thursday night after the game. I want to listen to this and then talk about it when we come back. Have a listen.
Well, you wondered what it was going to be like to get in there. What was it like, and especially in the first period, I think, where they had 8 quick shots on you?
I mean, that was really exciting. I was really happy to get in there. I mean, the team did a really good job of keeping everything to the outside, and it helped a lot. I mean, just went out there and played my game and had fun.
You had wanted some touches early, and you got them. Did that help out?
For sure, yeah. I definitely got some touches early, but again, like I said, the team did a great job of keeping everything to the outside and just keeping it easy for me.
How long did it take to settle in there?
Honestly, I was ready to go once my routine started. Once I got to the rink, I was a little bit nervous before I got to the rink. And then as soon as I stepped in, my routine started happening. Everything just kind of clicked, and it was another game for me.
What's the standout most for you, Eric, about tonight?
The biggest thing that stands out is just having my family here and how much they supported me the whole way up. And I'm just so happy for them to be here and have them reach my first win.
Did it feel different, an NHL game, compared to what you've been used to with the Moose for the last couple of years?
No, it actually felt pretty similar. I mean, it was definitely a little bit quicker. Guys can shoot a little better and everything like that. But for me, it was the same thing, and just going out there and playing my game.
You've always been such a student of the game. Just rely on your technical abilities, too, on a night like tonight?
For sure. I mean, it was just letting it go second nature. I've done so many practices, so many games in my life. It's my 100th pro game tonight, so it's not like I'm a new guy. It's just going out there and doing the same thing I do every single night.
What was the best piece of advice you got going into the game?
Really just enjoy it. I think Pascal Vincent gave me the best advice and just said, enjoy the anthem, enjoy the game, enjoy everything.
Okay, so Dave, what I love so much about this post-game scrum with Eric Comrie is that he's wearing the fighter helmet the entire time, right? So it's the biggest moment in his entire life, right? He wins his first NHL game, and the assembled media is asking him all these serious questions, and Eric Comrie's got the fighter helmet on the whole time, so you can't even really see his eyes, right?
Well, I've definitely, yeah, I mean, you know, I go in the post-game Jets room a lot, to do post-game, I should say, and I've seen guys wear fighter helmets, but I believe it was the first time ever a guy's worn the eye patch, or whatever you want to call it, over their eyes.
The visor,
over their eyes. You actually couldn't see his eyes. So it was rather endearing. It was rather fun. It was a humorous moment for sure. And it was a memorable night for a young player like Eric Comrie.
Right. And in that clip, you heard Eric Comrie talking about what it was like to play in front of his family and all of that. He picks up 35 saves and, you know, he allows 4 goals, but the main point or the most important statistic is the win, right? And, you know, he played for the Moose a couple of nights earlier and picked up the win over the Grand Rapids Griffins, Dave, a game that you were at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty impressive, right? And he was since reassigned to the Manitoba Moose. So there's a possibility that he'll play tomorrow.
Yeah, my guess is he plays tomorrow.
Right. And Jamie Phillips was in net last night.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was pretty funny. And, you know, Ken Weeb and Jason Bell are asking Eric Comrie questions with that fighter helmet mask on. It was so funny. I want to talk about Jack Roslovic as well, Dave, because he ended up playing about 8 minutes, didn't find himself on the score sheet. He had a shot on net. What did you think of how he looked in his first NHL game? We didn't expect much out of him. He was playing on the fourth line.
Yeah, and I think you saw, I mean, again, I kind of take it for granted because I see him in all the Moose games, but I think Jets fans got an opportunity to see just how fast this kid is. And in his acceleration is really good. And there was that play where it was, I think, a 2-on-1, or it was supposed to be a 2-on-1. And he was going to be the high guy. And the next thing you know, he's past Chris Thorburn, and he ends up, I think it was Bufflin, Thorburn, and Roslovic. And Roslovic ends up in front of Thorburn, even though he had originally started behind him. And so you can see his speed, and you can also see his position. He's really smart in terms of where he knows where he has to be. So obviously he had a little bit of a limited presentation or limited action, only played about 8.5 minutes. But again, I think it was more of a showcase. It was more of a opportunity for him to kind of get his feet wet and obviously to play in front of his home crowd, but also just to kind of say, okay, this is the NHL game and there's going to be a lot of development and you're going to have to earn a spot in this roster. You're not just going to be handed anything.
And we talked about it off air before the show, right? Jack Roslovic had around 100 friends and family at this game. So I agree with you 100%, Dave. For Roslovic and Comrie, this was all about just getting their first NHL action, right? This wasn't about necessarily playing for a spot next year. I mean, that's going to happen in training camp, right? When you have Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor now trying to make that jump to the NHL. Kyle Connor's already made that jump in a sense because he played, 19 games at the beginning of the year. But for Jack Roslovic, basically, it is going to be either the AHL or the NHL next year. And same goes for Eric Comrie, right? We expect Eric Comrie to spend the majority of the year with the Manitoba Moose. Certainly now with one game of NHL experience, I think there's a better likelihood that he's going to play more NHL games. But this definitely wasn't competing for jobs for next year.
Yeah, no, 100% is. And especially so for, I think for both of them, actually. I think there's no question. I think you're right. I think it shows that Eric Comrie, if he needs to, can get the call up and play if he with the Jets if they need a replacement player for someone who goes down with injury. But I do not believe that Eric Comrie is in the Jets' plans for next year, which is the right decision in my mind. And similarly for Jack Roslovic, I don't think it's a bad thing that he is probably most likely going to be with the Moose next year because he's a center, remember. And again, a lot of these guys, have the skill. It's not a question of skill. They have the speed. But it's about it's about maturity. You have to just kind of grow into your body when you're playing against these men who don't make the same sort of errors that you can sometimes see in the AHL. And again, I was talking about it last night on the broadcast with Mitch Peacock, well, for the Moose game. The one thing about Jack Roslovic that people have to understand is when he's playing in the AHL last night, he played power play, he played penalty kill, and obviously he played 5-on-5. He plays in all facets of the game. He's getting all sorts of opportunities. There's no chance he's getting those in the NHL right now over the Jets' top six. Now, again, I know there's the movement to try and get away from this notion of a top six, bottom six as to more of a, you know, top nine, and I don't have a problem with that. But my point is that right now, you know, especially in those kind of critical situations, power play and penalty kill, Roslovic is getting those opportunities with the Moose.
Dave, somewhat lost in all of this was the performance by Brian Little. He picks up 4 points in this game. He's been absolutely red hot, basically since he returned from injury. Starts it off with a beautiful assist on Jacob Trouba's first power play goal. Picks up an assist on Matthew Perreault's goal, the third Jets goal. And then he scores the eventual game winner in the third period. And watching that game, I mean, everybody was really focused on Eric Comrie and Jack Roslovic playing in front of the hometown crowd. What can you say about Brian Little, though? I know Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, they've really been driving the bus. But is Brian Little somewhat forgotten as far as the impact he has for this team offensively?
I honestly, I feel like we could have this conversation every single year. I think every year we talk about, I mean, we don't. I think we know, we're well aware of what Brian Little brings to this Jets organization. And I think if you were paying attention this season and you saw what happened to the Jets when you didn't have Brian Little in the lineup for the first part of the season after he went down in game one, you know exactly what his level of importance. You can't diminish the loss of a second-line center who obviously was the Jets' first-line center until Mark Scheifele took that position. But, I mean, he does everything. He wins face-offs. He's good in on the penalty kill if you need someone to win a face-off. He's reliable. And we saw, like, what does he have now, 22 goals?
He's got 21.
21 goals in, like, 49 games. So, I mean, he's been unbelievable. He really has.
58 games, Dave.
Oh, 58 games, sorry. That's what I
mean. That's okay. He's got 21 goals and 47 points in 58 games. If you actually take his points per game this year
and extrapolate it,
he would actually have a career year this year with 66 points. His previous career high was 2013-2014. So I agree with you, and we have talked about Brian Little and whether or not he is underrated. I think he still is underrated, not only across the NHL, but I think in our media market. Like, that four-point performance, I thought, was one of the best individual performances that we've seen.
Yeah,
this
year.
And
you know, it's funny because, you know, it's one thing sometimes you get lost in it. You're like, okay, he had a goal and 3 assists. Were they important plays? And they were, right?
Yes.
They were primary assists. And and a lot of times if you listen to the post game or you listen to players afterwards, they'll talk about, well, Little made this or Little did that. You know what I mean? So, like, you see the respect that he has amongst his peers when he's able to kind of facilitate the game the way he does. So I don't think there's any question that, you know, Brian Little's role was certainly not little.
I like that, Dave. And I realize that some people listening are going to be saying, well, come on, Illegal Curve guys. You're talking about a meaningless game, game 81 of the season. The Jets aren't going to the playoffs. But, I mean, wouldn't you rather see this team winning games and busting their buns to score goals, right? Like, we would be talking about, if the Jets had been losing these games, we'd be talking about how, well, these guys have packed it in and, you know, they're ready for the golf course and all of that.
Yeah.
I think when you consider that the Jets can go for their 7th win in a row, they've never done that in Jets 2.0 history, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is the first time they've ever won 6 in a row.
It is, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And I agree. I mean, the Jets aren't going to the playoffs, but we've heard Jets captain Blake Wheeler talk about this quite a bit this year. I mean, they are playing not only for the wins, but they're playing for their livelihood, right? These guys have pride, and they want to go out there and they want to win games. And when you're talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets, Dave, they've lost 4 games in a row now, right? So not only are you kind of spoiling the postseason plans of other teams, you're piling up the wins. And this just isn't about individual statistics, in my opinion. I don't think Brian Little cares at all about how many points he ends up with at the end of the year. I think he just wants to win games for this team. And so I think, again, I don't think there is any carryover till next year. Don't get me wrong. I think that you just want to finish strong. That's what you're doing. You're playing for each individual game. And, Dave, tonight, last home game of the year, what are you playing for? You want to give the fans who spend their hard-earned money, you want to give them something to be happy about and to cheer about, right? You want to leave them with a good feeling. So I think, if anything, and I realize that, you know, this might sound a little bit ridiculous, a game like tonight, Jets aren't going to the playoffs this year. I think it is about the fans.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the whole point is that you're going to have a lot of people in the building, and you're right, Ez. There's absolutely no carryover. I mean, we saw that last year. The Jets won the final four games of the year, and then circumstances happen. Brian Little goes down in game one of injury with injury. You know, you lose Tyler Myers, you're losing your players like that. So there's the reality of the situation. I mean, you have injuries, and that's going to change anything that happens from now. So realistically, obviously, there's no carryover. But the fact is that you want to send people with a good feeling into the postseason. I think they've done that. The reality is, what have the Jets really cost themselves? Have they cost themselves maybe a few draft spots? Sure. Okay. Maybe they'll draft, you know, 12th or something instead of 10th or 9th. I'm not trying to diminish that. Obviously, it's important to get a good draft position, but the Jets have shown a proficiency in being able to draft players in that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 spot. So I'm not too concerned about that. And I think there is an importance for this. I think, like, the fact is that you want to create some sort of good feeling as best you can, knowing that there was a lost season.
Dave, we talked about Jacob Trouba a little bit there. Next segment, I want to talk about Jacob Trouba's future with the Jets. Has he earned himself a lengthy contract, whether that's 7 or 8 years? Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jacob Trouba some more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an icy Saturday. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
RV on the far side now for Little. Back for Trouba, moving in, shoots and scores! Jacob Trouba quietly moving in, weak side. Put a one-timer pass, Corpusello. It's a power play goal, and we're tied at one.
Jacob Trouba's power play goal from Thursday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. He had two power play goals in that victory. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, if I can get that right, Dave, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Dave, the Winnipeg Comedy Festival is going on right now at Rumors Comedy Club. There are two shows tonight. One of them is sold out. That first show at 7:15 with Mark Heath is sold out, but there are still tickets available for the 10 o'clock show with Patrick Hay. And coming up at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, we've got Sean Wayans, and we've got the guys from Super Troopers.
Oh, that is two deadly combos right there.
Yeah.
Those guys are both very good.
So try to check out Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy are coming up at the end of April, and Sean Wayans is April 20th to 23rd, so go to rumorscomedyclub.com, get your tickets, and check out a little Winnipeg Comedy Festival tonight.
If I was in the Sean Wayans and he was doing a Q&A, all I would do is ask him questions about white chicks. I would just be like, Mr. Wayans, I have another question about white chicks.
Like, Dave, why isn't White Chicks considered one of the best movies of all time?
How it didn't win an Oscar, I really do not know, but it was nonstop hilarity from my perspective.
Like, I think I've watched that movie at your house at least 10 times.
It was one of those movies. I remember I went to the drive-in on Portage. And we,
wow.
Yeah, I know. And we went to see, like, whatever. That wasn't obviously the feature. We went to see a feature, and then, like, White Chicks came on, and I was like, all right, whatever, let's watch this one too. Why not? We're here. And then, I'm not joking, I laughed so hard the entire movie. I was like, this thing's brilliant. Terrible, but brilliant.
Is there any chance they bring that drive-in back?
No.
Is there anything there now?
Tumbleweeds, maybe.
Yeah. I remember going to that drive-in. It was great.
Yeah, I didn't go often, but I remember I went a few times, and that was one of the movies I saw.
Okay, Dave, we're going to talk about Jacob Trouba this segment. I teased it a little bit last segment. He picked up two power play goals. He's up to 33 points on the season. I'd calculated if Jacob Trouba had played the entire year, because he has had the suspension, and then he missed those games at the beginning of the season with the quote-unquote trouble with Trouba. He hadn't signed a contract in training camp and at the beginning of the season. So if you actually extrapolate his points per game, he'd actually be at 45 points.
Wow.
And he's already hit a career high in points, by the way. 33 points is his career high. And I thought, he was fantastic on Thursday night, playing 25-plus minutes. Now, the question I have for you, Dave, he's got 1 year left on that bridge contract that he signed back in October or November. I forget exactly when it was.
November 16th.
There you go. Would you sign Jacob Trouba in the offseason to a 6, 7, 8 year deal before his current contract expires? Has Jacob Trouba earned that? I guess the other question is, does Jacob Trouba still want to be here?
You know what, and that's something we don't know, because obviously there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that we're not privy to. So you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, what were the demands that Jacob Trouba wanted? He didn't want to play on the left side. He wanted to play on the right side. Well, he got that. And he wanted to play big minutes and a lot of responsibility. Power play, PK, 5-on-5. He's gotten that. Now, the question that Jacob Trouba's camp, I'm sure, has is, what happens when Tyler Myers comes back and he's healthy? Now, of course, there's so many question marks, because we all know, with the expansion draft, we don't know what's going to happen. Now, obviously, the big question mark is, will the Jets be able to get Tobias Enstrom if they asked him to waive his no movement? Would they potentially trade Tyler Myers? Would they potentially protect Tyler Myers? So there's so many factors that come into that decision from the Trouba camp, because I suspect, like, you know, we've talked about before, they're obviously not going to be doing anything too quickly anyways, but once they're able to make the decision as to whether they're going to sign an extension, I think those questions from their perspective have to be answered by the Jets. And if Kevin Cheveldayoff gives them the answers they want to hear, which is, you're still going to play the right side, you're still going to play big minutes, you're still going to be relied on, because realistically, a lot of folks around here, at least, are viewing the Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba pairing. If you can have that pairing for the next 10 years, I mean, how good is that pairing going to be once they really mature as players? So I think the sky is the limit for those two, potentially, if they're allowed to grow together and if they're allowed to play together, you know, in the future. But again, it becomes a function of whether those questions get answered in the affirmative for the Trouba camp. And if they do, then you have to kind of decide, is this a place you want to sign long term? Is Winnipeg where you want to be? And if it is, if you like this core group and you've grown up with these guys and you don't have a problem playing in Winnipeg, then yeah, if you're Jacob Trouba and you've been assured of all these things, then you sign that deal.
Dave, Jacob Trouba actually played 23 minutes and 41 seconds last night. On the year, Jacob Trouba is averaging just under 25 minutes a game. He's at 24 minutes and 57 seconds of ice time per game, which is 11th in the NHL. So I agree with you. I think it's almost a given, or you would assume, that his ice time is going to continue to be the same next year. He's getting increased power play time. He's getting increased overall ice time. We know that he's back on the right side. I don't think anybody is expecting Jacob Trouba to go back to the left side or not have similar ice time. I mean, to your point, Dave, yeah, that is the future number one pairing for this Jets team. It's Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. If your top pair is Morrissey and Trouba going forward for the next 10-plus years, and you have a Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook type of situation, I think that you're looking very good. Now they have to surround the defenseman that they currently have in the organization with an upgrade. So I think you throw in Dustin Byfuglien in there, you throw in Ben Sherratt in there, and right now I think that's the biggest need for this team, is a second pairing left shot defenseman. I've said this before. I mean, Toby Enstrom's in the last year of his contract. He's missed a lot of games over the last 3 years, and I think Josh Morrissey has passed Toby Enstrom on the depth chart, even in his first year. I think Morrissey's a better defenseman than Toby Enstrom, and Twitter is going to go crazy right now. But I think nobody is going to deny that Morrissey can be the number one pairing defenseman for this team beside Jacob Trouba, right? So I'm looking at Jacob Trouba right now, and if he does want to stay here, Dave, I'm absolutely signing him to a 7 or 8 year contract.
Yeah, you're going to try and max it out. There's no question. From the Jets' perspective, I mean, right now, Jacob Trouba looks like it's the most attractive contract in the NHL, you know, for what they're paying him, especially considering it's decreasing next year.
But whether the average annual value of that contract is $6.5 million or $7 million, I think you give it to him.
Well, again, you know, the problem for the Jets, and I mean, we'll talk about this, I suspect, all summer, is you're going to have to fit a lot of guys. I mean, we're going to talk about it with Brian Little. We're talking about it eventually with Nikolai Ehlers. We're going to talk about it with Patrick Laine when you have an opportunity to sign him, Josh Morrissey. There's a lot of money that's going to have to be handed out.
A lot of cake.
There's a lot of cake. And then you've already got guys like Byfuglien, Wheeler, Scheifele, although Scheifele's contract looks phenomenal right now. And then you've got Perreault, who's kicking in at four more years after this one. So, you know, there's a lot of money that's currently on the table. So, the problem is that, you know, you have these players who could potentially be franchise-type players in, like, a Jacob Trouba. And then you're sitting there going, you're saying, okay, we'll load the dump trucks full of money and dump them at his feet. But at the same time, you have to be cognizant of the fact that you have a number of other players that you have to kind of fit within that sort of, within the cap. So, yeah, there's no question that you want it, but you do want to stretch it out with Jacob Trouba in my mind and get him signed for as long as you can.
I think, Dave, when Trouba returned in November and his first 10 or 15 games and he wasn't playing very well, you said to yourself, okay, you know, when are we going to see the real Jacob Trouba here? And since then, since mid to late December, I would say, Jacob Trouba has been arguably the Jets' best defenseman. I would say that he has been the Jets' best defenseman, along with Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien. And you expect Dustin Byfuglien to be one of the Jets' best defensemen because he makes the most on the team, right? But I think since then, and with his play as of late, his offensive abilities, his defensive shutdown abilities, I mean, he's a legitimate top pairing defenseman right now at 23 years old. So I think you absolutely have to lock him up long term. And again, it goes back to what we were saying before. You're going to lock Josh Morrissey up long term after his entry level contract expires as well, right? So then, yeah, you do have a lot tied up in defensemen. But the reality is the Jets have had a lot of money tied up in defensemen since they came over from Atlanta, right, with Toby Enstrom. And then you had Zach Bogosian signing that contract. And then Buff obviously re-upped. This is the first year of his five-year contract, right? So Chevy definitely has some work cut out for him as far as fitting all of these guys under the salary cap. And maybe a contract or two does have to be moved out. But it's when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, I just don't think you can replace him. How are you replacing Jacob Trouba in the lineup right now? I mean, I realize they have Tucker Poolman coming up through the system, and you know he's going to get a little bit of an opportunity with the Jets and Boost next year, but Tucker Poolman isn't Jacob Trouba. That's no disrespect to Tucker Poolman, but Jacob Trouba is a top-pairing defenseman in this league.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right, Ez. I think you can't willy-nilly replace one of these guys and say, okay, well, you know what, we can get a Jacob Trouba. That's the whole point, is that these guys are a premium. There's so few players, and that's why a team like the Jets was loath to lose a Jacob Trouba, because, you know, you can't afford to just be like, okay, he's going to be offer sheeted, we're going to get draft picks. You never know what, look, I mean, go through a draft, you know, any NHL draft, and I don't care if it's a first-round pick, a second-round pick, there are literally hundreds of players who never even get a sniff of the NHL. Here's a guy you know is a bona fide NHLer, defenseman, top two pairing right now with this team, and those don't just grow on trees. So I, again, if you have the opportunity, if he likes the situation, if he likes what you're putting forward in a team, then you get him. Teams need to come together with the player and his agent and get something worked out.
Dave, we're going to pay some bills right now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kenny Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Even Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Ezra and Dave. Drew is off this week.
You've been saying that a lot lately.
I think Drew's coming back eventually, Dave.
We're okay with it.
I think he's back tomorrow, actually. Without further ado, let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by our very good friend Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun. Ken, how are you?
Excellent, Izzy. How are you? Hey, David.
Hi, Kenny.
Yeah, we're doing very well. And, you know, we should mention this is the official debut of Ken Wiebe on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You've been so busy on HNL and on TSN and various other platforms that this is the first time we've been able to have you on, Ken.
Well, we try to break down barriers whenever possible. We've been looking forward to this moment for a long time, so I'll do my best to not screw it up here.
Ken, I want to get right into Jacob Trouba. We were talking about him last segment. He picked up two power play goals against the Columbus Blue Jackets on Thursday night. He's got 33 points now, which is a career high. If you extrapolate his points per game, he'd be at 45 points right now. I guess starting off with a question about Jacob Trouba, do you think he's solidified himself as the future number one defenseman for this team?
Oh, for sure, guys. I think you could make the argument that for a good chunk of this year, he's already been the number one defenseman. I know Buffon still has the overall ice time lead and has the first power play unit time, but there have been a lot of nights where you would say Jacob Trouba was the best Jets defenseman. That is the biggest thing that I've noticed in his game this year. Going into the year, I wasn't sure he had the total package to become a number one, but I think that's no longer in question. He's got the offensive portion of his game back in order, and he's probably their best defender. So I do think he's going to have a long career as a number one in this league, and I think it'll be here with the Jets as well.
Ken, a lot of folks are talking about this six-game win streak and whether there's any – what value it has. What would you say the positives that can be taken out of this streak that the Jets have put forward?
Well, we can't kid ourselves, guys. Winning streaks when you're eliminated do not count the same as they do in November and December and January when you're fighting tooth and nail to become a playoff team and be above the playoff line. But having said that, for a organization that's trying to break a losing culture, obviously it beats the alternative. I understand fans would prefer a team goes into tank mode after they get eliminated from the playoffs, but anyone who's played sports at a high level knows that players are not going to roll over, and they can't afford to roll over. There are obviously players that have jobs set for next year, but there's a battle and competition for a number of things, not only roster spots next year, but it comes down to, you know, protected lists for expansion, and there are people that need to solidify themselves as bona fide NHLers, and if you want to do that, you certainly better not check out for the last 10 to 12 games. So I don't think there are any tangible benefits in terms of standings-wise or what it could do. This winning streak won't mean anything come training camp, but I think it will help the mentality of this team knowing what it takes to win those games. The biggest difference during the stretch is that they've got better goaltending, they've had better special teams, and those were two major issues that cost them at various points this season.
We're joined by Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Ken, I want to go back to Thursday night. You were there in Columbus. Eric Comrie making his NHL debut, picks up his first NHL win, and then you had Jack Roslovic making his NHL debut in front of 100 fans. How special of a night was that for Comrie, who was drafted back in 2013 in the second round, and then Jack Roslovic, who was drafted in the first round in 2015?
Yeah, you could tell in the emotion of the voices. And Comrie, actually, if you were in the scrum, you could barely see his eyes with the visor down. But certainly both of those guys quite fired up, and rightfully so. Eric Comrie's seen a lot of rubber in the last 2 years with the Manitoba Moose, and he looked very calm and comfortable. Obviously, he gave up four, but he made 35 saves, and he came up with some big stops when Columbus was making a push. And you can't discount the fact that this was not a routine playoff team that's kind of coasting towards an April playoff series. The Blue Jackets had lost four in a row and only scored 12 during the previous eight games. So this was a team that was hungry for success, not just a team that kind of took the Jets for granted. As for Roslovic, I thought he was steady. Obviously, it took him a while to get going with the, you know, he had his first three-second shift, and then Tortorella threw the first line over the boards in the defensive zone. So his first shift will not be a memorable one, but I thought he looked comfortable during the game, and as Dave mentioned on my way to the rink here at the Open, that he showed off his blazing speed and his vision on a few occasions, and I think the more comfortable he gets, that one scoring chance he had that turned into a wrister into the crest, that's going to be a shot that Jack Roslovic buries down the road when he becomes a full-time NHLer. So I thought he looked really comfortable. It'll be very interesting to see if what the Jets' mentality is towards their fourth line next year. If they go all skill, or if they bring in some guys who'll be used on the penalty kill and things of that nature. Could it be a Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, and someone else on that wing? Who knows? It all depends on the summers that those two individuals have and what kind of things transpire with expansion draft and free agency and the trade market. So I think both those guys are being rewarded for strong AHL seasons, Dave's seen them a lot more than I have this year, but I did see them live a few times. And I think those two kids know that's going to take a good summer of training, and they've got a lot of the raw materials required to become NHLers. When that time comes, will be up to them.
Ken, one player who really has been on a tear of late is Matthew Perreault, and do you think that's just simply a function of him getting healthy now as the recovered from his injury earlier in the season?
Well, it's definitely a factor, and he's been quite open in discussing that as being a major factor. But he's also playing with some incredibly skilled players, but it's not that he's just a passenger on those lines. Matthew Perreault has been a driver, and I think the biggest difference for me has been his skating in the second half. He really got his legs going. He got involved in the forecheck and things of that nature. But we always knew he was a skilled player. We saw that his first year with the Jets when he had the 18 goals and was tracking for a career high in points as well before he got hurt. He has been a very valuable player on this team. He's excellent on the power play, and he's also his 5-on-5 play has really been excellent since getting back into that top six. So I don't think it's a comfort factor. I know there's a lot of talk about maybe he'd be on the market because of the expansion draft, but he's been very comfortable, and he has been excellent, and I think he will still be part of the Jets' future. I know there's still a lot of debate over what could happen, but I'm expecting him to be part of things for years to come here as his extension gets ready to kick in the summertime.
Ken, you're at Jets morning skate right now, and it looks like, according to Munsey, he just tweeted out the line rushes. It looks like Brandon Tanev's going to play on a line with Adam Lowry and Joel Armia tonight. Is tonight's game maybe the most important for a guy like Brandon Tanev who's trying to prove himself to Paul Maurice?
Certainly, he's one of the guys who will be looking to get moving out there. There has been an opening for penalty killers, and that is one thing that Brandon Tanev has done well, both in the college and during his time with the Moose, and at times even with the Jets, as he got used to becoming an NHLer. So, yeah, it's certainly an opportunity for him, to play on the third line, if you will. I think if Brandon Tanev is going to be in the NHL as a regular, he'll be a fourth-line player long-term. But Paul Maurice has liked his speed since he's come back up, and if he handles the puck a little bit more like he has when he's been with the Moose, those are the things he'll need to do to become an NHLer. And obviously, he's got the skating ability and gets in on the forecheck. But I think if he uses the part of the offensive game that Dave has seen a little bit more with the Moose, that is what it's going to require for him to become a full-timer.
Kenny, one player that, when we did the projections at the beginning of the season, we probably anticipated him having a good season, but he's I think, exceeded almost everybody's expectations, is Mark Scheifele. What have you seen from Mark Scheifele's game, the growth in his game, from game one to now game 81?
Well, we've seen it since his arrival, that he's a very driven individual, a guy who works extremely hard. He has Adam Oates on the payroll as a personal skills coach. He is one of the few players that can't get enough hockey. He watches constantly. He's getting advice from anyone, from Connor McDavid to anyone who crosses his path. He could give you a scouting report of probably 98% of NHLers. And this guy just continues to work hard in his game. He's been an explosive skater, but he's worked hard to become an even better skater. He had the lightning-quick Joe Sakic release as soon as he arrived, and he continues to work on his shot on a constant basis. I think the playmaking part of his game has been there too, and he's just really blossoming into a bona fide number one center. And he's at 81 right now, and I said it on TSN3 a couple weeks ago. I can legitimately see Mark Scheifele being a 100-point player before his career is over, and it probably could come sooner than we think. He took a massive jump in points this year, and he also played a good chunk of time after that injury, not at 100%. So I think he's been a much more consistent player. There haven't been many lulls in his game, and he's also going to continue to work on that two-way game. But he's a driven individual, and I expect him to take another big step come the fall.
Ken, Kyle Connor is going to get into the lineup tonight, and he's obviously not going to play on the first line. He's going to play with Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn on that fourth line. I think there's a chance, though, we do see him play maybe on get some power play time from Paul Maurice tonight.
Well, I doubt it, just because Jack Roslick didn't get any. And as you guys know, Jack basically runs that first unit with the Moose. So just because they've been working on their power play so much in the last couple weeks here, and it's actually been going pretty well, because they have Armia sort of slotting into that new role on the power play, I don't see Kyle getting some power play time today. But again, when he becomes an NHLer full-time, he is going to be a power play player. He has a very quick release. He's a proven sniper, and as Dave has seen with the Moose, after a bit of a slow start, he really heated up, and he will be a point producer when he gets to the NHL. But it's all a matter of his all-around game as well. He's become a better 200-foot player. He needs to win more battles along the wall, but these are things he's working on. There's no questioning his skill set and ability. It's just a matter of maturing and having a good summer of training and getting stronger, like it is the case for most 20-year-olds.
Ken, tonight's I'm assuming tonight's starter will be Connor Hellebuck. How would you evaluate Connor Hellebuck's season overall?
Well, you can't discount the 25 wins. It's a hard league to win in for a first-time starter. He had a big workload, and to be quite frank, he didn't have enough support this year from his backup. Michael Hutchinson has finished incredibly strong, but when the Jets needed someone to push Hellebuck, they weren't getting a strong enough push. Having said that, Connor Hellebuck has taken some strides this year, but I think he needs to go back to the drawing board in some regards in the technical aspects of his game. But this is a guy who knows he's going to be in a serious competition. Even though he was the starter this year, I think he'll have a big push from someone else and a veteran guy come the fall. He's had a good season at times, but to me, he allowed too many soft goals this year. There were some stretches where he needed to play a lot better, but again, I'm not giving up on Connor Hellebuck being a potentially a number one guy, and I don't think the organization is either, but there are things that he needs to work on. I think his mental game has come a long way at times, but if you want to be a starter at the NHL level, you can't be having a 1 or 2 week reset like he had two of which this year. So it's a big summer for Connor Hellebuck as well, but I think when you boil it down, it's hard to be an NHL goalie as a young player, and I think he's going to learn a lot from all of the things he went through this year, and it will make him a better goalie in the long run.
Weber, final question for you here. Tonight is going to be Chris Thorburn's 750th career game, most of which have been with the Jets and Thrashers franchise. If this does turn out to be Thorb's last NHL game with the Jets, how is his time going to be remembered with this organization?
Well, Chris is a guy who gives absolutely everything that he has. I know some folks on social media have not been thrilled with him sticking around as long as he has, but this is a guy who sticks up for his teammates constantly and gives everything that he has. He's continued to be a decent skater, or a good skater for his role. I think his loyalty is being rewarded at this point of the season. I know some people don't understand that, but the players in this room, or in the Jets room, are pretty happy that they had Chris Thorburn as a teammate. He is a consummate professional, and no matter what some people think, he deserves to play this last game, and you know it will be his last game with the Jets, so I'm sure he's going to want to go out on a high note, and we'll see how he does. But Chris is a guy who gives you everything he has, and that's how he'll be remembered by the players who played beside him.
Ken, I definitely echo your sentiments. Thorbs has been a favorite of us, certainly on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and that might be because I was the creator of the GST line, but we'll talk about that another time. Ken, thanks so much. We know you're at Jets Morning Skate right now, so we really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us this morning.
Always a pleasure, gents. Enjoy the rest of the show here.
Thanks,
all right, Ken. We'll see you tonight. All right, let's head to break. We'll be back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Flips it into the corner for Yost. Penalty is over. We're back to five aside. Two shots on goal for Nashville. Craig Smith centers it. They score! A beautiful feed from Craig Smith, and the Predators take the lead.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Dave, Jets and Predators tonight at 6 o'clock, the last game of the season. The Nashville Predators have something to play for tonight. They can still catch the St. Louis Blues for third in the Central Division right now. They are 1 point behind the Blues. The Blues have two games left, though. So right now, the Predators are in a wild card spot. I believe they are in the first wild card spot, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right, yeah.
And the Calgary Flames are
Calgary's in first and Nashville
sorry.
In second.
Sorry. So Calgary is in the first wild card spot. Nashville is in the second wild card spot, which means right now you're trying to avoid playing the Chicago Blackhawks, right?
Which is a good team to avoid. Although Nashville and Chicago always seems to have good battles.
And they've played in the first round recently, right? So tonight you have the Jets going for their seventh win in a row. Unbelievable. It's never been done before by the Jets 2.0. And then the Nashville Predators are trying to catch the St. Louis Blues and avoid playing the Chicago Blackhawks. Nashville Predators, Dave, this year, it's been an interesting year. It's the first year that they've had P.K. Subban on their roster. Of course, that was the big trade in the offseason, Shea Weber going to the Montreal Canadiens. And this Nashville Predators team, we played that audio clip of Victor Arvidsson. He's up to 30 goals on the year now. Talk about underrated players. He's got to be the most underrated player in the league right now.
And Joel Armia is trailing him as he has the top most shorthanded goals in the NHL, I believe, at 5.
It's a very good player.
Yeah.
And last year was his breakout year. I guess this year you could say it was his breakout year offensively. It's been a career year for him. But what are you looking forward to tonight in this Jets-Predators game, Dave? You've got Connor Hellebuyck going back between the pipes, starting in goal for the Jets. Kyle Connor is going to make his return to the Jets lineup. He played 19 games earlier in the season. This Predators team has actually been really good here down the stretch. They've won 6 of their last 10 games, as we talked about. They're still trying to catch the Blues for third in the Central. Are you expecting another high-scoring game like we saw in Columbus Thursday night? Or are you expecting maybe more of a bit of a defensive chess match, Dave?
No, I'm expecting a high-scoring game. I think that the Jets have shown that they like to score goals, and they know they have to score goals. And you know what? They probably want to put on a good show for the fans. And they're probably going to be a little bit looser because you're right. They don't have anything to play for other than, you know, pride, and versus Nashville, who might be a little tighter because, you know, you're like you said, as they do have something to play for. They have something on the line. They have to play because they want to get into that second wild card spot. Now, the first wild card spot. Now, the likelihood of that happening with Calgary having one more game plus the extra, I think that, yeah, they've got the row advantage over Nashville, which is why they're in the first spot. But, you know what? It'll be really interesting to see. We're gonna have Pekka Rinne as the expected starter for Nashville. So you know, the truth is teams don't want to kind of fall into the playoffs. You don't like. I remember years ago I looked at teams and how they came into the Stanley Cup playoffs and whether that determined how they finished whether they made the finals or not. And it's not necessarily a team that goes 10-0 is gonna have the better advantage to, you know, winning the Stanley Cup eventually, but you still want to come in having good feelings and having good doing the things properly. And so you don't want to come in with a number of bad habits. That's what Columbus is so pissed off about right now, because they're kind of stumbling into the postseason having played so well for the majority of the regular season. So Nashville has to ensure that they're doing the things properly that they want to continue into the postseason. And right now they're 6-3-1 in their last 10, like you were talking about, and they want to kind of end it on a high note.
Another team, Dave, that has been struggling down the stretch, we talked to Curtis Pichelka on Wednesday's show, is the San Jose Sharks. They've lost 7 of their last 10. They play the Calgary Flames tonight. So, again, the Calgary Flames, they can't catch the Edmonton Oilers. So Calgary is locked in to a wild card spot. Right. So Calgary is either going to finish in the first wild card spot, their second wild card spot, and there is that outside chance that Nashville can catch St. Louis. But the thing is, St. Louis has two games in hand. They play Carolina tonight. Carolina has been playing some good hockey, so maybe Nashville gets some help from the Hurricanes. But you know, going back to the Predators season, and you know, I was kind of going over some of the numbers preparing for the show, and this Predators team can definitely score goals. And, you know, over the years, you know, we've always thought of the Nashville Predators as an elite defensive team, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this team is actually only middle of the pack when it comes to goals against. And then you look at their special teams, again, kind of middle of the pack. 15th ranked power play, 17th ranked penalty kill. They've always been a good faceoff team. They're ranked 8th in the NHL Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher are both around 54% in the faceoff circle. So they're a good possession team, the Nashville Predators. But again, you know, they've had an up and down season. They've been in a playoff spot for the majority of the season. But a few weeks back, the Predators hammered the San Jose Sharks 7-2. And then they followed that up a couple of games later, losing to the Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs. They only scored two goals in those two games. And this Predators team has been up and down. They shut out the Minnesota Wild last weekend, followed that up by losing to the Blues. Then they lost to the Islanders in overtime. And then they absolutely hammered. I don't know if you saw that game or the highlights, Dave, on Thursday night. They hammered the Stars 7-3. So this Predators team can score goals, but they're a little bit hot and cold. And, you know, we've seen the Jets and Predators quite a bit over the years being Central Division rivals. But I think this is going to be a very interesting game because right now the Jets, I don't think they're thinking, okay, we got to go for the 7-game winning streak. I think they just want to win in front of their home fans to leave the home fans going home happy to end the season. But when you talk about the Predators, I mean, this is an important game. And, you know, there might be a little bit of pressure off of them. But I think they're looking up at the standings and they're saying, okay, if we can avoid playing the Blackhawks in the first round, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Artemi Panarin, Marian Hossa, if we can avoid them maybe and end up playing the Minnesota Wild would be who they would play if they finished third in the Central. Why not go out and finish the season strong and improve our playoff seeding?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the fact is nobody wants to play Chicago the way they're playing right now. And you know, the fact is that if you can avoid a top team like the Blackhawks, you're probably better off facing a team like Minnesota who has kind of put it back together a little bit of late, but still, I mean, Minnesota's not Chicago. So if you can avoid the Blackhawks, you do so at all costs, I think. And if you're Nashville, again, like I said, you just want to kind of end the regular season. You obviously don't want any injuries, so that's the primary concern. But secondarily, you want to make sure that your final game of the regular season is kind of a good tune-up for what's going to happen next week.
And remember what happened last time the Jets played the Predators.
5-4 OT.
Yeah, there were a lot of goals in that game. So yeah. I agree with you. I think even though you expect maybe it to be a bit of a tighter game,
yeah,
both of these teams have a lot of firepower. Victor Arvidsson tied for the team lead in points with Ryan Johansson. They've each got 61 points. And then you've got Philip Forsberg with 58 points. Philip Forsberg, Dave, is a guy that's really cooled off.
He'll always be known as the trade that was the absolute robbery. I mean, David Poile could pretty much retire at that point and be like, that was a pretty good trade for him. So, yeah, he's definitely cooled off. But the fact is that, again, you know, teams, it's a team game and you want to see what these guys can do in the playoffs. And that's really where it's going to count for a player like Philip Forsberg, because the Predators are going to be relying on him to provide offense for this team.
Dave, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Adam Vingan, who covers the Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, Dave, two to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper. Adam, how are you?
Hi, how are you guys?
We're doing well. Adam, by the way, is it hotter in Winnipeg than it is in Nashville right now?
No, it's not. It's in the, I guess I can't speak to Celsius, but it's rather warm in Nashville. It's certainly not warmer here than it is there, but it is significantly warmer here than it has been in any of the times that I've been here. First time I think I've seen it Fahrenheit-wise above negative digits. So I walked around town yesterday without a jacket on. It was spectacular. You got some great springtime weather here.
Oh, yeah, we're getting some beautiful weather out there, and don't be surprised if you see most people with the shorts on because, you know, it was a long winter here in Winnipeg, and we're definitely soaking up the rays right now. Adam, I want to start off by talking about Victor Arvidsson. He, to me, has been such a pleasure to watch this year. He had 4 points in that win over the Dallas Stars. He's now up to 61 points on the season, including 31 goals. Not bad for a fourth-round pick back in 2014, eh?
Not only that, but a player who went undrafted in his first three cycles through the NHL draft. It took him until the 2014 draft to make it to the NHL via the draft. It really is a great story. I remember writing a couple of weeks ago that Victor Arvidsson's career arc sort of resembles an inspirational sports movie. You know, here's a scrappy, undersized underdog who was overlooked, who defied conventional wisdom and made it to the NHL, and he's having a spectacular season. In my opinion, he may be the only Predators player this season who can escape criticism of any kind. He's been their most consistent player all season. He's been very productive, as you mentioned. You know, I'm not sure what the leaderboard is now, but he's really been in a dead heat with Boston's David Pastrnak in terms of the largest point improvement year over year from last season to this season. This was a player, Victor Arvidsson, who only had 16 points last year and 8 goals, and now he's over 30, and the Predators have their third pair of 30-goal scores in a season for the third time in history. It's the second consecutive year, Philip Forsberg being the other one, and last year was Philip Forsberg and James Neal. But you know, Victor Arvidsson really is what makes this team go in a lot of ways, in my opinion. I think he sort of embodies the intensity and doggedness that the team likes to have when they're playing at their best. And he's become a fan favorite in Nashville. Today is his 24th birthday, and he could challenge for the single season record for Nashville, which is 33 goals. So he would need two tonight against the Jets to tie it, and a hat trick to overtake it. So it'll be an interesting storyline to watch in the last game of the season.
Adam, the Predators clinched, which is good for me because it keeps my prognostication going. But the question I have for you is, who would be, in your mind, the best opponent for the Predators? Who do they match up best with, and who would be the nightmare matchup for them?
Well, unfortunately for them, their best matchup was something that they blew last Sunday. They went to St. Louis in a game where they could have taken not complete control, but taken a pretty fair amount of control against the St. Louis Blues. They lost 4-1. That race is more or less over. That would have put them in a first-round matchup against the Minnesota Wild, which is what I think would have been their best matchup. Last Saturday, they beat the Minnesota Wild 3-0 in Nashville. We know that Minnesota has sort of stumbled down the stretch after having a great first half of the season, three-quarters of the season. And now they're locked into the number two seed in the Central Division, but they really haven't looked like themselves in over a month. So I think that would have been the best matchup. I mean, it's still possible they could meet the Wild in another round if things work out in a certain way, but I think that would have been their best first-round matchup. As for their nightmare matchup, it's the one that the Jets could directly influence tonight. If the Jets defeat the Predators in regulation, the Predators will start their Stanley Cup playoffs on the road against the Chicago Blackhawks, which is a team that I don't think anybody wants to see in the first round, let alone the Predators, who have not had a lot of good luck against the Blackhawks as of late. In the past three seasons, including their playoff series 2 years ago, the Predators have lost 14 of their last 20 games against the Chicago Blackhawks. So I do not believe the Predators would survive a first-round matchup with Chicago. So their interest is getting at least a point tonight against the Jets and hoping that the Flames don't get anything or fewer points against the San Jose Sharks, so the Predators can jump into the first wild card spot and play the winner of the Pacific Division.
Adam, I wanted to ask you about Predators goaltender Pekka Rinne. He's had another solid season. He's got 31 wins. He's started 60 games. UC Saros has played the other games for the Predators. When you talk about this Predators team and the potential for that first-round matchup against the Chicago Blackhawks, is it safe to say that Pekka Rinne is maybe going to have to steal a series for this team?
Yeah, I think at any point, especially as a goaltender, you're going to have to be at your best in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I talked to Pekka Rinne on Thursday in Dallas. He did not play in that game. UC Saros did, and I would expect to see Pekka in net against the Jets tonight. But I talked to him. He's 34 years old. He'll be 35 early next season. And this will be his sixth NHL playoffs as the Predators starter. And not once has he helped lead this team past the second round, which is not entirely all on him, obviously. But, you know, you sort of have that yeah-but argument. Pekka Rinne is the greatest goaltender in Predators history. Yeah, but how many Stanley Cups has he led them to? Zero. And ESPN had an interesting stat the other day that in his previous five playoff seasons, only once has he had a save percentage in the postseason above the league average. That doesn't mean that he can't steal series. I think he essentially single-handedly won the Predators the first round series against Anaheim last year. They were down 3-2 in the series. He stopped 62 of 64 shots in game 6 and 7, and the Predators won their first game 7 in franchise history and then went on to the second round and faced the San Jose Sharks, where they lost in 7 games. So a lot of people are wondering what the future holds for Pecorine. This is still very much his team. UC Saros has been a great help, the fact that he's a capable backup who can give Pecorine more rest than he's had in recent seasons, but there is no doubt that he is still the number one goaltender on this team, and he will be in net for game one, and as long as he is healthy and active, he'll continue to be the netminder for this team.
Adam, PK Subban is in his first year with Nashville. He seems to have embraced all things Predators on and off the ice. He's having a bit of a down season compared to his normal in terms of points, but how would you evaluate PK Subban's first season in Nashville?
I'd say it's incomplete, and that's no fault of his own. It's been an eventful season for him, but not entirely, not one without its bumps. Of course, when you have a trade of that proportion, it's never going to be easy to adjust right away. And I think it took him a while to do so. Which what also didn't help in that pursuit was the fact that he missed most of training camp with an injury. He played. You know, he was fine for the season opener, scored the Predators' first goal of the season in their season opener against Chicago all the way back on October 14th, and didn't really seem to get his legs underneath him for a while. And as soon as when it felt like he was going to, he got hurt. He had a back injury, and he was out for a month, and then he sort of had to start from scratch again, and he took about 3 weeks, I would say, for him to get adjusted once again. So I think I don't think you really saw the real PK Subban until after the All-Star break. And you look at his point totals, he's not a point per game player, but he's pretty close over the last 25, 30 games. So, you know, you're seeing it from the entire defense. Roman Josi had an inconsistent start to the season. Ryan Ellis had to fight some injury as well. So the defense is playing really well, and that's what sort of led this team back to where they are. You know, I know it's hard to remember, but this team had finished October with the second worst record in the NHL. They were 2-5-1. They were 2-6-2, I believe, after 10 games. But they were able to battle back and earn a playoff spot. And then expectations were enormous, not only on the team, but on him as well. So he's playing his best hockey of the season now, which, of course, if you're the Predators or a Predators fan, it's the best time for that to happen.
We're joined by Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper, live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Adam, you just mentioned Ryan Ellis, and he's actually having a career year this year, 37 points. Has he finally developed into that top four defenseman that the Predators thought he was going to be when they drafted him in the first round back in 2009?
Well, I think when I look at Ryan Ellis' season, as you mentioned, career highs in goals, career highs in points, ice time has ballooned by several minutes per game. I think what Ryan Ellis has meant to this team is that he provides, in my opinion, the steadiness that went out the door when Shea Weber was traded. Now, that isn't to say that the two of them are similar players, of course. I mean, Shea Weber is a mountain of a man and a very physical defenseman. Ryan Ellis doesn't play the game the same way, but always seems to be in the right place, always seems to make the soundest plays. And there was a period of time earlier this season where I feel like his value to this team was sort of crystallized for me, and you have to go all the way back to mid-January. PK Subban was still out. He missed 16 games with an injury. Roman Josi suffered a concussion and was out for about 9 or 10 games. There was a three-game overlap where Roman Josi and PK Subban were out. Both of them were out of the lineup. First three games of a 5-game road trip. Ryan Ellis was spectacular in those three games, and he really held it down as the top defenseman in that situation. And that, to me, said that this player is so valuable to this team. And every year you're going to have an underrated Predators defenseman because of just how many good ones they have. You know, last year, I think it was Roman Josi, and maybe the year before as well. I think with the continued rise of Roman Josi, the arrival of PK Subban, I think Ryan Ellis has taken that underrated label. You know, he's been spectacular this season, in my opinion, and has really sort of been a linchpin for this defense.
Adam, head coach Peter Laviolette is in his third year with the Predators. First-round loss in his first year, second-round loss in his second year. Is there any pressure on the head coach to get this team farther into the playoffs, or is he safe right now?
Well, I know it never means anything when this happens, but before the season started, he was awarded with a contract extension. So that doesn't necessarily mean he's safe. But to your point, this is, we're sort of following an interesting trajectory with Pierre Laviolette, because look at his body of work as an NHL coach with the New York Islanders, the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Philadelphia Flyers. Every first season he's had, he has significantly turned the team around. His first season as a head coach in New York, I think he engineered one of the largest single-season turnarounds in NHL history. In his first full season in Carolina, if I recall correctly, he led the team to the Stanley Cup. In his first season in Philadelphia, he led the Flyers to a Stanley Cup final and ultimately lost to the Chicago Blackhawks in 2010, if I recall correctly. The Predators under him were a President's Trophy caliber team through 60-plus games, then fell down the stretch and ultimately blew it, but led this team to its longest playoff run in franchise history last year at 14 games. So I don't think his job is in jeopardy, but you're getting to a point where things are starting to follow a similar pattern with him. His teams always start off like gangbusters when he takes over, and things sort of slowly erode from there. So I don't think his job is in jeopardy at all, regardless of what happens in the postseason. But if the same thing were to happen next year, maybe it warms a little bit. But I don't think he's in any danger right now.
Adam, final question for you here. We were talking about Philip Forsberg last segment before we had you on. He's having another good year. He's got 31 goals on the season. But last year in the playoffs, he really struggled. He only had 4 points in 14 games. Is it safe to say when it comes around to the playoffs, and whether they're playing Chicago or Minnesota in the first round, is it safe to say that they're going to need Philip Forsberg producing at the level that they've expected over the last 3 years?
Yeah, and I think last year during the playoffs, he was battling a back injury of some kind, if I remember correctly, which may have hindered his production. But this was it was about a month and a half ago where he scored 10 goals in a 5-game span, becoming the first NHL player in 16 years to have a run like that. Pavel Bure was the previous holder of that run, 10 goals in 5 games, which says a lot about the company that Philip Forsberg keeps. But you know, he scored 3 goals in his first 30 games of the season, and now he's at 31. He just had an incredible second half, just like he did last year when he had 19 goals in the Predators' last 32 games to finish with 33. So, yes, of course you need Philip Forsberg. You need everybody. You need Philip Forsberg. You need Victor Arvidsson to keep playing the way he has. You need Ryan Johansson to keep producing the way he has. You need James Neal to step up. You need Pekka Rinne to be solid in goal. You need P.K. Subban and Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis and Mattias Ekholm. You know, this team has a lot of talent. It certainly does, and that's why a lot of people pick them to be a Stanley Cup favorite during the preseason. And I know that the season hasn't gone as planned. It's been a pretty rocky season, but they got to this point, and they can still do a lot of damage. I don't think they're a team a higher seed wants to face in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they showed last year that they can win in that underdog type role. But it's up to them, obviously, to do it. They have the talent to challenge. For a Stanley Cup, it's just a matter of seeing if they can put it together.
Adam Vingan covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. Adam, thanks so much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning, and we'll see you at the rink tonight.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Adam, take care. Let's go to a break. And when we are back, we are going to discuss the Jets signing Jansen Harkins, Dave, to a 3-year entry-level deal, and then signing Michael Spacek to a amateur tryout agreement. We'll be back and we'll talk about that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an icy Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And a 2-on-1 developing the other way as the Jets come in. There's a shot on net. They score. Jansen Harkins down the right-hand side, elects to keep, and beats John Gillies to make it 1-0 Jets. They score 4-on-4.
That was a clip of Jansen Harkins scoring a goal at last year's Young Stars Tournament in Penticton. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. Dave, yesterday the Jets signed Jansen Harkins to an entry-level deal and also signed Michael Spacek to an amateur tryout agreement. You were down at the Iceplex.
Yep.
And you had a chance to talk to both Jansen Harkins and Michael Spacek. Well, you had a chance to also talk to Jansen Harkins last year. He played, I believe it was 5 games,
five
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 6.
5 games with the Manitoba Moose. I guess it's safe to say that Jansen Harkins and Michael Spacek had big smiles on their face yesterday.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, as you were at the draft in 2015 when these guys were drafted by the Winnipeg Jets originally, in the second round for Jansen Harkins, the fourth round for Michael Spacek. And it was funny to see the kind of the progression of these young players, because they're still so young. But, like, you know, when we talked to Michael Spacek at the draft in 2015, he had to do it through an interpreter. Yesterday, obviously, he was able to have a conversation with me. His English is much improved from what it was in 2015. But, yeah, no, there's no question that they're both very excited about the opportunity. Michael Spacek playing in his first professional hockey game last night really looked pretty good right from the outset. You know, both guys had a quick first shift, kind of got their feet wet a little bit. Jansen Harkins was talking about it to me in the at the Iceplex, talking about how there'll be a little bit of nerves, even though he had played, obviously, with the Moose the previous year. But you know what? He's an interesting player. He's a very smart player. He's a very intense player. He plays generally center, but he also can play the wing. They had him on the wing yesterday. His shot's pretty good. His skating could use some work, but he's positionally very sound. And you know, he took a little while to get warmed up into the game yesterday, but he had an important play, led to a forced a turnover in the Tucson zone, which got the puck onto JC Lapointe's stick and then over to Dan DeSalvo, who put it home for I think it was the fourth goal of the game. So Jansen Harkins had a nice game, and Michael Spacek showed a lot of creativity. I mean, the only knock on Michael Spacek will be his size. He's only about 5'11". He's a pretty slight kid. He'll need some more time, I suspect, in junior. But the fact is that he's got some tools. I mean, he's got speed. He's got creativity. He's got a good shot. So I think that the Jets have themselves a nice player in Michael Spacek. I asked him, why did he have that big jump? Because in his first year with Red Deer, he had, I think, 50 or 60 points. And then the following year, this year, with Red Deer, second year, he had 85. He had 30 goals and 55 assists. So I think he had a really nice season this year. And I asked him, what did he attribute that to? And he simply said it was the comfort. You know, I mean, he's a guy, and that's what I talked about it with Mitch last night on the broadcast. These guys, these young guys, they come to another country, and we kind of take that for granted. I mean, this is a kid who's coming to North America for the very first time, doesn't have the language, doesn't have family, doesn't have friends, and has to play hockey at a high level. So, I mean, that's a lot of adjusting for a young player. And now that he's adjusted and gotten friends and become more comfortable, we saw the benefit.
And Dave, when you're talking about Jansen Harkins and Michael Spacek, you mentioned they were both drafted in Florida in 2015, Harkins in the second round and Spacek in the fourth round. And when you think of these players, you think, okay, well, these guys are probably going to be third or fourth liners at the NHL level. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not future important pieces for this Jets team, right? Because we all expect Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor to take that next step either next year or the year after. When you're talking about Harkins and Spacek, they're probably two or three years away, right? So when you're talking about Harkins, he's going to play a big role on the Moose next year, right? He's most likely going to play on the second or third line, but he'll get power play opportunities. He'll probably get some penalty killing opportunities. Harkins had an amazing year with the Prince George Cougars this year, 72 points in 64 games. He led the team in scoring, and they were recently knocked out of the WHL playoffs. But, you know, Harkins obviously has the bloodlines from the NHL. His dad played in the NHL. And then, you know, his pedigree and his leadership qualities, I think there's a lot of excitement around a guy like Harkins. And then, as you mentioned, Spacek, you know, puts up 85 points in his second year in the WHL, a huge jump from his first year. And I think there's a lot of hype around him now and to see what he can do. He was also very good at the World Juniors for the Czech Republic. So these are two blue chip prospects, I think you could call them that, for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think that they're maybe at the same level as Kyle Connor or Jack Roslovic as far as what their offensive upside is. But certainly when you talk about, you know, the Manitoba Moose, and they've had a better year than they did last year, and they're not going to make the playoffs, but they picked up a win last night. Brendan Kitchen scored the OT winner. We haven't had a lot of time to talk about that, Dave, but the Moose also defeated the Grand Rapids Griffins, a pretty good team. So, I mean, I think there's reason to be very optimistic about this Moose team next year when you consider guys like Harkins and Spacek. Spacek, I agree with you, is probably going to go back and play with Red Deer because he only signed an amateur tryout agreement. The same contract, by the way, that Jansen Harkins signed last year, which is common just to get a few games in with an American League team. So I think that, you know, there's reason to be excited for Jansen Harkins, a guy that, you know, a couple years down the road might be a guy that's a big contributor for the Jets.
You know, it's interesting, as you talked about the OT winner by Brendan Kitchen, and that to me While I anticipate the Moose will look different next year, they'll have some different pieces, no question. It really showed how much these guys actually cared about each other, because it wasn't like I said, Mitch and I were talking about it, because it was almost as like they want a playoff game. That's how significant the reaction was from all the players, because Brendan Kitchen, I mean, and he's a very honest player. If you actually listen to him talk post-game, his post-game interview was just, you could just see he's talked about the monkey off his back. He talked about the anxiety, because he has been so close to getting that first goal of the season. I mean, he was the number one points producer for Manitoba last season, and that role's diminished a little bit this year. But you could genuinely see the excitement that his teammates had for him on that play. And you know, and to his credit, it was a really nice play. He got out there fresh. He was the only Moose player out there, because they had just gone for a line change. So he was basically one on three, took the puck, curled around, made a really nice play, went backhand and put it in. And like I said, it was like, it's as if the Moose had just clinched a playoff game, because like a playoff series, because the entire team pours on and almost knocked him through the gate that the officials usually leave through. So it was a nice reaction from his teammates.
By the way, Dave, huge hats off to the Moose organization for wearing the Cunny Did stickers on their helmet last night in support of Tucson Roadrunners player Craig Cunningham. We know what he went through last year. So that was really nice to see the Moose wearing those hashtag Cunny Did stickers. Check Dave's Twitter account out. He tweeted out that picture yesterday. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Manitoba Moose goaltender Eric Comrie. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.